You might have some really classically, if you will, trained videographers who are incredibly skilled, but can they do short form? Can they adopt trends? Can they do vertical? Or can they translate a really complex topic in a way that will resonate with the target demographic? Those are social media skills that are so unique, I think, to our industry. We're beginning to see them, I think, in a multitude of other spaces.
Hey, welcome to the Higher Ed Storytelling University podcast on the EdUp Experience Podcast Network. This is a show dedicated to helping higher ed marketers tell better stories, create better content, and enroll more students. My name's John Azzoni. I'm the founder at Unveiled, and we're a video production company working specifically with college marketing teams to make it easy for them to scale up and even automate their student and alumni success stories through our subscription approach. And you can learn more about that at unveiled.tv, and that's UNVEILD.TV. If you're listening to this podcast for the first time, go ahead and subscribe. We'd love to have you. And if you're wanting your college or university's content to resonate on a deeper emotional level with prospective students, with alumni, with parents, whatever, I want you to subscribe to my free newsletter. Every week I send out tips and insights on creating more emotionally resonant content, including examples and best practices from other institutions, articles and blog posts, that week's podcast episode, and much more. So head over to unveiled.tv/newsletter and sign up. All right, let's get on with the show. My guest today is Nikki Sundstrom. Nikki is both Assistant VP of Strategic Communications at Indiana University and also teaches at University of Michigan School of Information. She is an award-winning strategic communications leader of inclusive and innovative teams, and she's also a consultant and public speaker. And today we're diving into the leadership and team building aspect of Nikki's work as we talk about how she built social media communications teams at both IU and U of M. So Nikki, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we always start off with this icebreaker. What's something that people would be surprised to know about you?
Excellent question. So I usually have two go-tos on this, both of which, if you followed me on social media for any amount of time, perhaps you've heard of. But one, I am the mother of six. The new caveat to that, which fewer people know, is actually I have two grandchildren now. So that's my new wowzer kind of fun fact.
You have grandchildren?
I see. This is it. Yes. Yep. Exactly. My oldest daughter is 21 and married now, and it's just wild. So that'll make you feel old on any given day. But the other fun fact that I always like to draw attention to is that my family has successfully traveled all 48 continental United States in two countries. We love to road trip and find lovely restaurants and locations off the beaten path and really encounter and explore Canada and America, but meet phenomenal people and really, think deeply about the world around us. So.
Cool. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And people that are listening and not watching the video version, Nikki looks extremely young.
Thank you very much.
Does not look old enough to have teenagers even, let alone grandchildren. So that's what my response was. was out of
You're not the first
there.
One. It's okay, John.
Yeah. okay. So tell us about your background a little bit. How did you get kind of to the topic we're talking about today, where you're building comms teams and things like that?
Absolutely. So my journey in communications or comm strategy started during my undergraduate experience, where I was studying political science. I was really passionate about public service and community building and philanthropy, and I wanted to have a prominent role that brought people together and advocated on the behalf of those that most require and have the need, right? Really thinking about community to government specifically and how to serve the people. And I've always been incredibly passionate about that, from being the party thrower in high school to being on student council and things like that. So I ended up running for elected office in our former town where we lived in West Michigan, and really enjoyed that and utilized social media as a background, as many politicians do in these days, to create my campaign. Around the same time, I found myself working in policy and legislative affairs for the state of Michigan, and advocating that social media be used more widely as a tool to increase government transparency and improve constituent relations. And that very quickly then became my full-time job. So I was the state of Michigan's first full-time social media coordinator. And wow. I managed and built the digital presence across state government departments and the governor's office, and influenced how leaders and brands and businesses created the first statewide social media day. If you think back, for those that have been in the industry long enough, it was a completely different world. My favorite experience and campaign, I think, was we went around with giant thumbs and had people talk about why they liked us on Facebook, right? The good old days, as I will call them. And then the University of Michigan ended up calling me back in 2013 and saying, hey, we really want to look at strategic social media, or look at social media strategically, and we'd love to have you come down and talk to us. And so I ended up in Ann Arbor. And I spent 9 really fantastic years there building out one of the best social media teams in the higher ed industry, which led, of course, to an opportunity to elevate my profile here at Indiana University as the Assistant Vice President for Strategic Communications, a portfolio that expands beyond just social, but into crisis and exec comms and public safety communications and state impact, and really talks about and demonstrates in a tangible way how much social touches, which ironically enough is exactly what I talk about in my course at Michigan each week, was how social media is just prominent in every aspect of our life.
I don't know why it just gave a thumbs down.
You gave me a thumbs down. It's okay. I talked about, you know, on social media. Sometimes I want to give that a thumbs down too.
On Riverside, I didn't even do a thumb. I didn't just sitting here listening to you.
All these reactions.
Let me turn the tables here and give you some fireworks.
Oh, nice. I like it. It's good stuff. I heard recently something about confetti and jazz fingers, but I haven't been able to get it to work.
You're like talking and I'm just like, boo. Cool. Well, so you've done a lot. That's awesome. Was it Governor Whitmer that you were working with, or?
Well, this will tell my origin story of just how old I am, but I actually came into state government under Governor Granholm towards the tail end of her administration, and then spanned the majority of the Snyder administration. Mm-hmm. So I was at Michigan by the time Governor Whitmer entered office.
Okay, cool. My family loves Ann Arbor. We did like a day. My wife took my youngest daughter just on a special mother-daughter date on a train from Detroit to Ann Arbor, which is like a short enough train trip for you know, a 4-year-old at the time. Mm-hmm. So that was fun for her. And since then, they went to the hands-on museum and some other stuff.
Yeah.
And Rylan, my daughter, she just loves Ann Arbor. So I told both my girls, my oldest is almost 9. So when you turn 10, you know, I'm going to take you anywhere you want to go. Let's sure. just like whatever you're into, you know, let's just go. Like my oldest is really into like roller coasters, so we might just go find like the scariest roller coaster or something. My youngest, Rylan, she's like, I just want to go to Ann Arbor. I'm like, really?
I mean, I'm gonna misquote it, but I'm pretty sure that Ann Arbor within the last couple of years won like the most or best city to move to or something. So she's not alone. There are a lot of big fans of Ann Arbor.
I believe it. Yeah, it is a really cool town. Okay. So when it comes to building, you know, teams at both of these schools, like what are some unique challenges, that come along with staffing creative teams within because these are large, you know, university systems. So what are some of those challenges?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, my response to this question changes each time that I'm asked it, because I've had some really unique opportunities to both build teams, but then also reorganize and restructure teams. So I'll start first with my journey at Michigan. When I arrived in 2014, I had one full-time social media staff person. So it was myself as a director, and we had a content manager. And then we were very lucky to have a couple of student interns. by the time that I left Michigan, I had a team of 12, right? So we were able to make strategic justified investments in time, talent, and resources that would allow us to really create niches. And this is where I think social needs to head and should be heading, right? We need to navigate away from what I've always disliked, which is the ninja guru maven, insert, you know, ridiculous adjective word that we've been called for so long, and start to think of these as strategic communications teams. You know, you need an animator, you need an illustrator, you need a graphic designer, you need someone that is specialized in vertical video. So some may know this, but the University of Michigan actually entered the TikTok game sort of late in comparison to some other higher education institutions, where we've been a thought leader in a lot of other spaces. But that was incredibly intentional. And it was because I was still building my case to justify a full-time position on my staff that was dedicated to vertical video. And I was able to accomplish that at Michigan. So Pat Stancic has been there for almost 3 years now, and his whole role is to build up vertical video, which we know is one of the most pivotal content aspects of social media, because when Instagram started to prioritize it and stories were introduced, it completely changed how we tell stories. And so I think that's where my top piece of advice is to look at your team, to look at your structure, to look at your organization, and stop being, you know, Jacks and Janes of all trades, or, you know, using it as a badge of honor to be a one-stop shop. Does that mean that you won't still have to create a graphic? No, I did that yesterday, right? Will you not be able to produce and like weigh in on how a video is going to look? I did that last week, right? We still need to be able to be cross-functional, but we need to advocate to build out teams that are intentional in order to meet the goals and objectives of our institutions or our brands or our businesses. And that I've been fortunate to do here at IU. So while I have made hires, I also adopted a really phenomenal team of existing staff, as well as brought on and shifted and adjusted individuals from other business units who had specialized skills that would, you know, benefit IU as an institution within the social media portfolio. And so some of that looks like specific individuals that are allocated to daily reporting and tracking online conversation to mitigate institutional risk and help us elevate concerns. You know, other facets of that look like somebody that's allocated specifically to the strategy related to visualization. So who's looking at Instagram, not just on a day-to-day basis, but on a month-to-month and a year-to-year basis, to say, how are we doing a really diligent job of being inclusive, of being accessible, of making sure that the story aligns with the narrative that we're trying to promote on the behalf of the institution? And, you know, that can't always be done with headcount. I know that's always a challenge with, you know, budget models in higher education as a whole. And so sometimes it's about collaboration. So who can you find across the institution? What networks can you build? Who can you get to help source content? What's that narrative that you can say so that everyone has a shared vision for success? And that's how you build a strong team.
Quick break here to tell you about a thing that all the cool higher ed marketers are doing. They've all subscribed to the Higher Ed Storytellers Digest. It's my weekly email newsletter where I unpack practical tips, insights, and inspiration for creating more emotionally resonant content for their institutions. And guess what? I think you're cool, and I want you on the list. Past newsletters have featured stuff like the anatomy of viral content, what makes a piece of content spread like wildfire. Also, examples of really compelling user-generated video content coming out of other institutions and getting a lot of traction on YouTube. We've also talked about how emotional content isn't just being sappy all the time. There's a variety of emotions that your content can speak to that can inspire a prospective student to take the next step with your institution. And so we've unpacked that. We've shared exclusive mini podcast episodes and bonus content that you can't get anywhere else but the newsletter. We've shared workflow tips for using AI to aid in content creation, all kinds of stuff that we unpack in this newsletter. And on more than one occasion, I've treated my entire list to free Starbucks. I make no promises, but just saying. it's been done twice. You'll also stay up to date on the latest episodes from this podcast. So if email is a better way for you to subscribe to a podcast, this is the way. So head over to unveiled.tv/newsletter and sign up. And when you sign up, you'll be given immediate access to all the previous editions of the newsletter so you can binge the various topics that we've touched on and links and resources we've shared, all that stuff. So do that. unveiled.tv/newsletter. Unveiled is spelled UNVEILD. Okay, back to the show. I like what you said too. It's like we've hired a social media rock star or something like that, and yes. Most schools, and I know at, like, for smaller colleges, to have a social media person at all might be a luxury, yes, or a new thing. So not mm-hmm. to discount that,
absolutely.
But however. As you grow, that you have to realize that that is not, like, that's such a broad job.
Yes.
I had, there's one school that I work with on video stuff. And when I first started working with them, my contact there, she was the sole social media person for, and they have multiple campuses across the state of sure. Michigan. So, and she was just like, drowning.
Absolutely.
You know, and then not only that, they were expecting her to also make a bunch of videos and do all the mm-hmm. all the photography and stuff like that. So, like, the partnership, you know, with me made a lot of sense, because I actually kind of like took a lot of that content, so like let her just focus on the social media part. But even sure. just focusing on the social media part, it was like, it's a ton of work. And I love that you guys have, or just the idea of someone dedicated to vertical video. And I think mm-hmm. that's, I love that you couch it like that, because it's not just like someone just dedicated to, you know, TikTok or whatever, but right. it's like this whole category of short form vertical video yes. that is taking off, and it has its own place in this whole social media thing, where it, like, it's a certain type of video that people are kind of looking for, certain mm-hmm. things that they're looking to see in your school, or certain types of entertainment. But also the reach is really crazy on, yes. on these, and to understand how to ride the wave of that reach mm-hmm. Is, and it's always changing. I mean, what's really interesting to me is that, like, 'cause I've been experimenting with vertical videos with snippets from the podcast. My first YouTube short got like 5,000 views or something like that. And then the one I posted yesterday, which I spent the most, like, I hired an editor that I paid to do this video. It was the most expensive social video I've ever done. I think it has 3 views right now. That was, it's like, just dealing with these algorithms, you need someone to keep up on. Now I'm like, up at like 6 a.m, like, what is going on with the algorithm here? What changed? You know, it's constantly changing, and specific to these vertical videos.
Having a dialogue earlier today, specifically related to the course, one of the courses that I instruct at Michigan, and, you know, the title of the course is Social Media and Organizations. But in speaking to that class, we're not, like, teaching content creation. We're teaching the strategy behind social media as a communications vehicle, right? So I've long said social media is a tool, not a solution. And that reminder of the position and role that it plays within a really robust, calm strategy is so vitally important. And that is a far different mindset than somebody that does know how to create a really great TikTok, right? And so you have to have either, well, they call them a unicorn, I guess, someone mm-hmm. that can do both, which are fewer and further between, or put the investment behind getting the people that can niche in those areas and bring the most value to your institution, right? If you make the strategic investments and the financial investments to say, we want somebody that has a strategic comms mindset that understands crisis, that understands the role that social media plays as the front door to an institution, both proactively and from a risk mitigation standpoint. You know, that mind can then feed and say, you know, based on this conversation, we're seeing an uptick in bike theft. We're seeing an uptick in sexual assault. We're seeing an uptick in name your concern from your community. And then turn that to your creative team and the social media team and say, you know what, let's do a faculty expert interview. Let's get a law enforcement officer on a vertical video. Let's get some student ambassadors to talk about this in a peer-to-peer sort of fashion. Or let's create graphics that offer resources. Those are the things that you need on a team in order to really make headway and facilitate impact.
Yeah, and as you're building these teams, like where are you looking for? How are you sourcing talents? Are you posting a job and just vetting applications, or are you,
yeah?
Tell me about that.
So I've long said that some of the most, at least in the beginning, I'd say the first decade of my professional career that was impacted by social media, some of the most qualified, even though they didn't think that they were, individuals working in this space were coming from politics, because they really understood how to synthesize information and perhaps sensationalize prompts, right? So that grassroots mentality of campaign and advocacy. We saw a lot of individuals emerge from that space and come into social and strategic comms. And that was just the origin story, I think, of social media, right? Like, how are you going to poke, prod, and gather and bring people together in the way that you would with a campaign or, you know, door knocking or whatever else it might be? Mm-hmm. From there, we saw a lot of colleges, including Michigan, start to have areas of focus, whether it be majors or minors, specifically related to social media. Within my 9 years at Michigan, I had 44 different student interns that were within our office. Some stayed for a semester, some stayed for all 4 years of their academic journey. I want to say only one of them had a minor in social media. Because for us, it's all about the perspective that you can bring and the passion that you bring and the ability to look at things that will be a unique and applicable conversation or visual sort of ideation, because we're looking externally, right? If you think about it from a marketing perspective and not just a comms perspective, I want prospective students to see social media content that makes them want to go to this institution, that makes them feel like their voice would be heard and their perspective would be valued and their background would be appreciated, that they would feel like a member of a community where they can thrive. And that is not that required that you study social media to get that. You could be an organizational psychology major. I had one of those. You could be a sports management major. I had, you know, one of those. Art and design was always a popular one, particularly with videos and graphics. Psychology is one that I've seen emerge more and more as we think about misinformation and doxing and well-being in the social media space. Like, what impact are we actually having on culture and society? And if you have that broad perspective and can bring forth the value within social media, I don't care where you're coming from necessarily from a talent perspective, right? But you've got to understand the power and potential of social media, and we can have that conversation. And so since, you know, coming here to IU, we've seen people come from nonprofit, also come from government, certainly people that have some comms background, but, you know, if you apply, I'll look at them all. And honestly, where I source the most talent has been through the network I've been able to build across higher education, because those in social media and higher ed that get it. And they are really tremendous people who appreciate and I think value what great people can bring to our industry. And so usually I can make a few outreaches and they'll say, you need to talk to this person, or you need to talk to this person, and they've never let me down yet.
That's really interesting. And I feel the same way, like in my experience as being a video producer, hiring people and working with a lot of freelancers, my favorite people to work with are the ones that didn't go to film school. Yes. You know, they are, and that's not to say, like, I've worked with a lot of great, more like traditional, like brought up in the film school, kind of world, people, and they're great. However, you know, what I'm looking for is more of like an artist or like, you know, a director. If you can direct and you can, and you have creative ideas and you're not just someone that's like, well, tell me what to do. You know, where do I point the camera, or what should all the camera settings be? Like, if you can like think on your feet and have some vision, all the technical stuff, you can teach all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's really trying to hire the other way around, hiring for someone that knows how to make a good video, like, but doesn't really know how to create, as well. There are way more of those people than you realize.
Well, I think video is an excellent example, John. It's that, you know, you might have some really classically, if you will, trained videographers who are incredibly skilled, but can they do short form? Can they adopt trends? Can they do vertical? Are they going to come to me and say, I shot this horizontally, I'm just going to cut it for vertical? And then I'm going to say, yeah, that's not going to work, right? Or can they translate a really complex topic in a way that will resonate with the target demographic? Like, those are social media skills that are so unique, I think, to our industry. We're beginning to see them, I think, in a multitude of other spaces, primarily, you know, marketing. But the best way to see where it falls short is in all of these brands that fall terribly on their faces, right? Like, they might have had a really good videographer, but they lacked all of those other social awareness pieces that would have made their content really sing.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, just thinking about it from like a really strategic communications point of view. And I'd never thought about it as like, you know, people coming out of the political sphere would be really good at that. But that makes perfect sense, because I remember, you know, so when in the early days of social media and President Obama, and like that was like how he got to office, was like this crazy campaign, a social media campaign. And I remember I was just starting like my marketing, social media kind of interests around then. Mm-hmm. And that was really influential, to see like, you know, a presidential candidate did something like really different, you know, from a lot of people, and really utilized the current tools in a strategic way. Obviously his team, you know, of mostly, but yeah, very different from just someone that, you know, kind of knows about the algorithms here and there, and, you know, knows how to publish something, or, you know, it's so much deeper than that. I wanted to ask you, you're the person you mentioned that does the vertical video stuff. Are you guys shooting that stuff on a phone? Like, is that part of, like, we're intentionally shooting this on the phone, or are you like repurposing content from the video people?
Sure. I can answer that to the best of my ability, since I departed from my role at Michigan a year ago, now this month. But some of it is phone. A lot of it is phone based. And then other adaptations come from, you know, more traditional videography work that then is edited to fit a vertical format, but shot in a way that, you know, it's not duplicated. And that's one of the things that I spent a lot of time teaching and mentoring on here at IU, is how to ensure that each piece of content that you're creating is unique to the platform, right? How do we optimize not just for dimensions and ratios, but for communities and target demographics? Because what may work on Instagram in a vertical, right? Not just because TikTok and Instagram like to fight, but like what might work here and is trending in this space is not the same as over here. And I love that you brought up President Obama, because it's such a fascinating case study that is still true today when you look at influencer culture. Building authentic, transparent, identifiable personalities will keep you top of mind in conversation for decades to come, right? So there's been a lot of conversation just that I've seen recently in algorithms that, you know, sort of liken back with Gen Z and even a little bit of Gen Alpha on who and where influencers have gone, right? But when you think about it, they've probably moved into a different phase of their life where they're not vlogging every day, right? Or they're not doing a food blog or whatever else. But President Obama is still active in social media, whether, you know, it's likely still a team, but he built this personality that people identified with, where they could probably tell you more about him as a person and why they support him as a politician than maybe even the laws he actually passed, right? Mm-hmm. But he's our friend, he's our ally, and he's somebody that we have confidence and trust in, at least from the perception that he built in social media. And anybody could potentially do that. And then we see other people that do it really poorly. Whether it's valid or not, then everybody dislikes you, right? And so the power of social in those spaces is just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I was discussing that with, it will be a couple episodes by the time this comes out, a couple episodes ago, with Jeremy Tears from the Mission Admissions podcast. We were talking about just like, what a great idea that would be to build accounts, like school sponsored accounts, that are just uplifting, like like one account for one individual, and you're kind of setting them up to just be a personality and show like day in the life stuff, like I'm waking up, get ready with me while I get ready to go to class, like whatever it is, whatever the trends are, or whatever is like authentic, but like for a prospective student to be like, I want to follow. Like because we follow like reality TV characters, right? Like I watch Love is Blind, and then I will go down the rabbit hole on all these people, look them up on Instagram. My wife and I are really obsessed with that show. I'm probably more obsessed than she is. but yeah, I mean, like when you connect with someone, or you're just intrigued by, you know, by someone's journey or whatever, or maybe they're the villain and you just like love to, you know, that's what like Love is Blind. You're like, you want to like research, like what's the villain up to right now, you know, but like you follow these people and you get attached to them, you know, and to have that sort of phenomenon play out with getting attached to the brand. I don't think enough organizations really play with that level of content creation. You know, we think about marketing as like, well, here's all the things I want to say about my school. But really it is, I like that the way you put it is like building, you know, personality, you know, that people can attach to and know and like and trust. And so
The perfect example of this, which, you know, based on your timing will probably be a while back, but this last weekend, TikTok was captivated by this woman named Risa Tisa, who was telling a 50-part story about her encounter with her former spouse, who she classified as a pathological liar, right? So it was everywhere. And she created this series as just a normal person. But in the comments and the shares of her story, in the duets of her story, people are raising funds for her. They're trying to get her on these journeys that her ex-husband had promised. Somebody, of course, doxed and found the ex-husband. Everyone was captivated by this journey of this stranger, right? But said, I feel like we're friends now. You've really helped me. This has enlightened my journey. I need to look into my ex-husband now. Like all of these just wild things from someone that we would have never met in real life. And her story will shape, right, the story of many others at this point. Mm-hmm. And not to cast doubt on her, because I believed the narrative that she was telling. But that's part of the issue, because we do, I like to say, we blindly trust the internet in ways we would never trust a person.
Absolutely.
What if that story is actually fabrication? And what if she did, through a bad situation or a traumatic situation, tell a narrative that wasn't true about this individual? And then how do you repair that reputation? And there's probably a whole legal battle in there too about talking about people like that. But it's just fascinating to watch people take things at face value and make friends and identify with individuals. And I think there's an enormous amount of responsibility that we hold as brands, businesses, and organizations when we start to dip our toe into that water about who we build out that personality around, whether it be an executive leader, a president, a dean, you know, within the higher education environment, because they're still people. And they're not all flawless or perfect. And we ask a lot when we feature students in our content, because people might be mad at us for a different reason, and then they get thrown within that mix. Or, you know, we visualize an identity that the internet might not agree with, and then they get thrown into the mix. And I just think we have to be incredibly careful and really thoughtful about how we do that.
Absolutely. It makes me think of, I mean, the idea of responsibility. It makes me think of that show Cheer that was on, and I don't remember the school, but one of the main guys was like everyone's favorite, and he was on all these talk shows and stuff because he had this like funny like way of encouraging you know, people on the mat. And now he's in jail for sexual assault. And that was a big thing. And then Netflix did like a whole sort of series on the fallout of that, but the fallout was quite significant, you know, for him personally, for the coach, for the school. So yeah. Okay. So you had mentioned just the importance of, tell me how important is like the well-being of your team when it comes to, you know, things like burnout, helping them grow in their careers, things like that.
Absolutely. You know, this is something that from a leadership perspective, I think truly has to match the evolution of the platforms on which we are asking and requiring them to work. And when you look at something like social media and how quickly it evolves and the prominent role that it plays in crisis communications, in risk assessment, in responsiveness, right? So you can utilize another Michigan institution as an example. Active shooter scenarios or active attacker scenarios play out. Every time your community is upset about a response to a political instance, that all plays out in social media. And so if you're not tending to and prioritizing the well-being of your teams and your leadership, you will see burnout, right? And we saw a massive amount of this, a massive exodus, if you will, during the pandemic. Tons of people were like, I'm done with social media, not just personally, but professionally. They were transitioning out of the industry because you were bearing the brunt of the online criticism, but in many circumstances had no real influence over the decision-making process, right? So you would see people being doxxed on social media, staff for vaccination requirements at collegiate institutions. And they didn't make that decision, right? They weren't the institutional president. They weren't the CDC, but they were the ones that had to read every comment or criticism that came their way, every concern about COVID and moving collegiate audiences back onto campuses, every complaint about your fire festival food offering or quarantine, right? Like it's just, it's crazy to not think. And I feel like it's far too frequently done. It's missed what they're seeing and they're exposed to. So when it comes to how I lead, right, and I have the perspective moving up through this industry, I always look at my role as a continuous and constant advocate, ally, and, you know, sort of that frontline barrier, right, a buffer, if you will, to both say, my team really needs this time, or they're working outside of business hours regularly, or, you know, they need and deserve this coffee day or this lunch, or the ability to work remote on a Friday or any given day. Whatever I can do to ensure that those above me understand the strategic value and importance and the impact that staff is having is the best way that I've found to try to tend to their well-being. And the other side of that is helping them to grow and succeed in their existing roles, but thrive outside when they make the decision to leave, right? So I don't think, and I've already moved on to a role that social media is within the portfolio, but when I was director of social media at Michigan for 9 years, I would always say, like, I'm not going to retire as director of social media. Like, this isn't a career that I retire from as just a singular sort of space within the industry. And I think we have to acknowledge that as leaders, if we do our job well, people within the social space will continue to move up to the point that then they move on and move out. And that's why we need to build them into really phenomenal strategic communicators and not just social media specialists, right? Not just people that can write the copy, but they write the copy in a way that aligns with the strategic purpose, that achieves a goal on behalf of the institution, or that presents inclusion, accessibility, affordability, whatever that narrative for higher ed is. And then they can pitch that to be a comms manager or a comms director at some point, or move into a space that they feel incredibly passionate about and rewarded within.
Yeah, that's good. And for, yeah, it's, and it's in content creation too, I think is, I mean, from a content creator's perspective, it's very stressful. It's to yes. you know, hit deadlines and stuff like that. And then also, you know, to see maybe your, you know, yourself grow in a different way. And I've been, you know, in jobs before where it felt like there was like a ceiling, and you know, you don't want that. You know, I have so much respect for my previous boss for just allowing me to grow and kind of giving me the opportunity to fail. And just kind of, most of the time just laughing with me about the failures, you know. He didn't take stuff too dramatically, but yeah, it's so important. And a side note, I gotta figure out how to turn these thumbs down off. I don't know what's going on. Where is it pulling this from?
If you look back at my LinkedIn, you'll see that recently I actually shared, because in our staff meetings here, we kept ending up with fireworks and thumbs up, and I couldn't figure out how to turn it off. So now we've just embraced it. We go all out all the time.
Yeah. All right. Well, for people listening, it keeps having like this hand, like a thumbs down hand, come up on my screen as if I'm disliking what Nikki's saying.
I feel terribly judged.
Yeah. All right. To Google, we will go after this call and turn that off. Okay, cool. So those are great thoughts. What advice would you give to a smaller school that doesn't have the resources as a large university system to hire out these individual team roles?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, when I think about how I've mentored individuals in the space that do have smaller teams, you know, you really have to set realistic expectations for your leadership based on what your organization is capable of. And I've spent the last decade helping organizations streamline their social media to increase impact and effectiveness. You know, if I could delete Facebook from everywhere, I probably would. But it may not be the right place for you. And it's unrealistic if you are a one person organizational team to be on 12 platforms. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, maybe your time is best spent only having a TikTok, right? Who's your target demographic? What are you capable of creating? And communicating that, right? Communicating regularly that you may be overwhelmed or stressed or need a resource or need help, assistance, and advocacy to get a network colleague, or maybe resources from the marketing team that has a photographer. It's unrealistic for you to be a videographer, photographer, copy editor, and graphic designer, and also put content out across Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and X, right? Like, it's just, that's not the world that we live in anymore. And when you think about even using higher education and the evolution of Twitter into X as an example, we have a lot of legacy accounts there right now that aren't having the same impact, but we're still allocating the same time and resources to them. And at some point, we have to ask ourselves why. Mm-hmm. So we can't be scared of those difficult conversations because we need to remain rooted in strategy and not just content creation. And I think some of that is because those that haven't been in the industry for 20 years forget that we've actually been here a while and we spent so much time advocating just to get a social resource, whether it be one or 10, that now we want to continue to justify their existence. We just need to think differently about how we do that, right? It shouldn't mean that we're cutting by cutting a platform. It means we get to do these other platforms even better. And that's what we need to focus on is the optimization, the intentionality, and the value that we can add.
Yeah, that's super good. Yeah, it's just focusing in to it's such a grind to feel like all these new platforms are coming out and you have to try to understand all of them. And I think that's so important to just give people permission to go. You don't have to understand all of them if you're the one person. Yes. You know. So yeah, that's great. Where would you like to see, or you know, where do you see your current team, you know, growing, improving, you know, over the next year or two? What, you know, what are you doing to kind of elevate, you know, skill levels? And yeah, just talk about growth for your team.
Sure. So, you know, with each individual, it's uniquely different. And I'm constantly having conversations to check in with them about how they feel like projects that they're doing are going, or offering them opportunities to, of course, elevate their ideas and shape. You know, maybe it's a 6-week campaign for graduation this year, or maybe it's, you know, what our back to school influencer sort of video might look like. How do we build out the intern team? Like, how do we give them opportunities to manage content projects? If that is what they're interested in, right? For others, they might be focused more on strategy. So looking holistically at peer comparison and benchmarks, and how can we continue to move ourselves forward? Growth has become so incredibly difficult in social media as platforms have aged. So what is our unique offering? And some like to focus on that. Some I know are prepared to move on and outward. And how can I help you grow within that area and communicate how robust your portfolio is, right? I do a ton of sort of mentorship around not just selling yourself as a social media specialist. Yes, that is valuable. Mm-hmm. But if you don't want to go into another social media specific role, you need to talk about the work that you've done in a different way. Right. I'm not just a content creator, but I created comp plans. I mitigated risk online. I measured and did reporting. I did storytelling, right? Maybe they want to move into marketing. I focused on integrating brand. All of those things are present in a social media content specialist daily role or a social media manager or director. Mm-hmm. And so when you're thinking about how to help people grow, it's helping them to see themselves holistically and really position themselves for success. And it's something that I honestly really love and feel deeply passionate about doing, which takes me all the way back to the beginning of my journey, right? I am an advocate for people, brands, businesses, and organizations, and I want them all to find success. And so that's how I like to allocate my time.
That's awesome. Man, I would love to have worked for your team, you know, coming out of college and my first, step into social media and content creation and stuff like that. You just seem like just a solid leader, not only a solid leader, but like just a mentor, because I think I've experienced this in the past where you want the person above you to know where you want to go, but you don't want them to feel like or to assume that you're not interested in the job that you're doing.
Sure.
And so I think that's great that just, you know, you kind of have that future vision for your team and you expect them to grow and for some grow out of their role, and do bigger things. I love that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's the benefit. If you think about generational stereotypes, right, that's the benefit, I think, of millennials moving into leadership positions. We have, since the beginning of our professional careers, never really looked at or had the opportunity for pension level roles within organizations. I've never been on a 30-year one organizational journey, and using that insight and knowledge, I typically anticipate within a social media role, I have somebody for 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. And that's probably it. So let's make it the best 3 to 5 years that I can for both you and for wherever you go in the future.
Very cool. Yeah. Awesome. This has been super great having you on. You're very articulate about that. I can tell you do public
speaking.
Thank you
very much.
So where can people connect with you, and how can people work with you if they want to have you come speak or whatever? Consult.
Oh, phenomenal. Thank you. Connecting with me on LinkedIn is always a great place, right? The one social media network I still fairly actively maintain. But I also have a website, nikkisundstrom.com. I do consult on the side, and I'm always looking for phenomenal opportunities to add value to various brands or people. And so that's a great way to connect with me too. If you're looking for some of that travel content or to see those 6 kids and 2 grandkids, you can find me on both TikTok and Instagram as well under the same name, Nikki Sundstrom.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it, Nikki.
Of course. Thank you, John. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening. 3 things I want to give you before you go. Number one, reminder to sign up for my free weekly newsletter all about creating content that resonates emotionally with your audience. And you can do that at unveiled.tv/newsletter. Unveiled is spelled UNVEILD. Number two, if you've enjoyed this episode, share it with someone. Share it with your team, your boss, your dog, whatever. And if you're not already subscribed, I'd love for you to do that. Number three, reach out to me. If you have comments, questions, you want to talk about a video project, whatever, my email is john@unveiled.tv. John is spelled J-O-H-N. Or follow me on LinkedIn. If you're searching for me, my last name is spelled A-Z-O-N-I. That's all for today, and I look forward to catching you on the next episode of the Higher Ed Storytelling University podcast. Thanks.